Welcome to Writers' Voices. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me today is my co-host and mother, Caroline Kilborn. How are you today, Mom?
Beautiful day. Oh, wow. This is what spring's supposed to be like.
It is. It is. But we know that winter's last gasp may not have occurred yet.
That's true.
We don't want to get too used to this gorgeous, gorgeous Iowa spring weather.
Well, spring's coming, but it's winter's dragging its feet.
That is for sure. Yeah. That is for sure. So who do we have with us on Writer's Voices today, Mom?
Well, you want to pronounce her name?
Yang Huang.
Yang Huang. Okay. Yeah. And she grew up in China's
Yingzhou
province, and mm-hmm. she participated in the 1989 student uprising. Her debut novel, Living Treasures, won the Nautilus Book Award's Silver Medal in Fiction, and her essays and short stories have appeared in The Margins, 1111, Asian Pacific American Journal, The Evansville Review,
and on and on.
On and on and on. And she lives in the Bay Area and works for the University of California, Berkeley.
Welcome to Writers' Voices, Yang.
Thank you so much, Caroline and Monica. I'm thrilled to be here.
So you grew up in China. How old were you when you moved to the U.S.?
19. I came as an engineering student.
So very similar to one of the characters in this book.
Yes.
The title of the book is My Old Faithful. Now, My Old Faithful is a short stories, but it's kind of a novel, too. Do you want to describe the structure of this?
Yes, it's a linked family story. So there are five people in this family, a father, mother, two daughters, and son. Each person tells two stories about the defining moments of their lives, essentially, and the peripheral characters in other people's stories. This covers pretty much the adolescent years of the children, with some flashbacks set in the 1960s. So the events happen from 1960s to 1990s in China and the U.S.
And this pretty much is the time period that you would have been in China, and then the parts that happened in the U.S. would have been when you first came to the U.S.?
Yes. So I know those experiences, and I know these people, but the events are fictional.
That was going to be my next question. How autobiographical is it?
Well, the people and places are real in the sense they're all composites. So I put one person's head on another person's body with third person's mouth in the compact space of a short story. The character just feels more real and forceful than all the three people that I know.
Now, do you still have family in China?
No, they're in the U.S.
And
I have extended families in China, right, and have a lot of cousins. Yeah.
When's the last time that you were there?
2010, I think.
Do you?
Oh, actually, no. I'm sorry. 2016, 15.
So not so long ago.
Yeah.
Have things changed a lot from the time period that you wrote about in China to now, do you think?
On the surface, every 5 years, China became a different country. There are a lot more new buildings, and the city landscape really changes. But underneath, Chinese people are very much the same, especially family, which is a cornerstone of the society. And there is a public life and private life for every Chinese family. That aspect remains the same.
So Yang, what made you decide to tell this story in this way, where each where you have separate stories told from the point of view of the different characters in the family? Why did you, the linked story structure, why did you decide on that?
We all have heard the saying that even the wise judge cannot settle a family dispute. And a lot of times, we don't care who's right, who's wrong in the family. A lot of times people just want to express the emotions or growth as themselves and self-discovery. So I decide to let each person tell their stories from their own perspective. By juxtaposing those different perspectives, we can see how skewed a character's point of view is. For example, the father doesn't know how insightful his son is. Just when you think you have the last word, other people will trump you with their fresh perspective. By having those different stories, I keep the book from going down the whirlwind path. In the sense, there's a balance of power because nobody controls the outcome and people all have their free wills. I think this gives a more complete picture of the family as they go through those volatile teenage years.
It's interesting that in the table of contents, the way that she has it laid out.
Right. The title of the story is preceded by something that gives you a hint of whose perspective it's from.
Right.
So what the son did is the first chapter.
And it's under the title of The Selfish Youngsters. What the son did. Then the next one is what the father wanted. And the third one is what the mother did not know. So, to look at this, you think, this sounds interesting. And it was.
Right.
Yeah, it gives a clue what the story is about. Hopefully it will make you want to discover what happened to those people. Mm-hmm. And I suppose you guessed what the Chinese characters mean, right?
So are the Chinese characters, do they mean the same thing as the sentence that follows, or no?
It's a narrator.
One must be son, one must be
father. Mother.
And one must be mother.
Because there's another father. Uh-huh. And then they have the daughters.
Yes. You get it perfectly.
So I know the word for little sister. Mei Mei.
Oh.
My grandchildren are half Taiwanese. And so. I can't remember what they call the older brother. There's a word for that too. But they call the little Ava, my granddaughter, her nickname is Mei Mei.
Yeah, impressive. Yes, that's exactly right. It's a little harder to read.
Yes,
to say.
Definitely. And what is big brother?
Xiong. Yeah.
Okay. The kids have learned Mandarin, but they don't speak it very often, except to their other grandparents, I think. And they're only 5 and 8 years old. But one of the first words my grandson learned was that he taught me was, and I know I don't say it right because every time I say it, they correct me, but Xiao Niao, which is supposed to be bird, but I don't know how close.
Oh, Xiao Niao, yes.
Yeah, you have to get that. There's a
the
lilt in it. There's a lilt in that. Yeah,
the intonation.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
So. It's fun. I'm encouraging them to become more fluent because I feel like being fluent in Chinese and English is really a good skill to have.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
In today's economic world, I would say so.
So Yang, did you know English when you came to the U.S.?
Yes. I studied English seriously since middle school, but it was different. We studied British English. And when I came to U.S., I simply couldn't understand what people were talking about. But being an engineering student, my life was made easy by, I can just focus on the formulas and the programs. So it's a dumbed-down version of real English.
Well, mathematics and I was able... is a universal language, isn't it?
Yes, yes. It's very beautiful and very clean, and there's nothing controversial about mathematics. So I was able to get through college successfully without knowing much English. And I learned over the years.
I was gonna say, somewhere along the way, you picked it up pretty well.
I would say so.
Yeah.
I worked hard because I love language. I'm fascinated by language. And I always wanted to write like foreigner. I just think it's refreshing to have it. They usually tell story without cliches and from a perspective that makes you look at the familiar things in a new light. So that's what I always wanted to do. I want to, you know, bridge cultures.
So you write in English then?
Yes.
Yes. And are any of your works translated into Mandarin?
No, not yet.
Maybe someday?
Maybe, I hope so.
Yeah.
But China is very much censored. You know, there are a lot of sensitive political subjects that you're not allowed to talk about. And I hope that will change, but sometimes I'm not so optimistic.
So do you feel like your works would not, as they are now, would not be able to be published in China under the current regime?
My debut novel would not be published. It's called Living Treasures because it didn't really directly criticize Wen Chao policy, but the regime would take it as a direct criticism. My own Facebook, I think it's okay. It really has nothing politically sensitive. It's about a middle-class family trying to make their way through those years.
Right.
But, you know, there's also business aspect of having your work translated. So, yeah.
Now, the family in My Old Faithful has three children. Were they born before the one-child policy?
They were born before the one-child policy was strictly enforced. That didn't come until later, but it was already introduced, and the financial penalty and other penalties were already been put into place. So they knew what's coming, and the parents feel pretty lucky to have the youngest one. Mm. Yeah.
Do you have siblings?
Yes, I have a younger brother.
Now I just wonder: Are there many books published in China?
Like novels?
Oh yes.
Novels.
Yes, there are a lot of novels published in China.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a lot of writers.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Yang Wang, who grew up in China and now lives in the Bay Area, works at the University of California in Berkeley. And are you in the English department or literature, or are you in the engineering?
I'm in the electrical engineering and computer science department. I am an IT person for the instructional labs. I like what I do.
So you must be pretty well balanced, left brain, right brain.
I would think so, but there's never a balance when you want to do something seriously. So you always just use one side at a time, and there's always more to be gained by developing both sides. So, yeah.
So what made you decide, you know, as an engineer and IT person, to be a writer? Why did you want to write novels and short stories?
Well, it started with my childhood. I'm an introvert and don't have lots to say, but I can go on writing. My parents found I enjoyed writing, so they tried to dissuade me from it. They lived through the Cultural Revolution and saw that the finest writers in China were persecuted and secondary writers were bought off by the state. I grew up during a time of economic and technological reforms in China. My father tried to infuse me with the belief that it's sexy for a girl to be a scientist because no political movement can touch you. So I took the advice and studied physics in college. I came to the States as a computer science student. Working as an engineer made me restless. I began to take English and writing courses and eventually earned an MFA in fiction. In hindsight, I can see that my temperament is suited to be a writer. I'm an observer, endlessly curious, and sympathetic toward people. I love words and books. I have a spiritual bent that makes me look down on material things. I want to be free and use my imagination. As a young person, I accepted that life is unfair, but a writer can create a more just world in books by focusing her gaze on that injustice. To me, that is empowering. I want to become that kind of storyteller.
And is that what you did in your debut novel?
Yes.
And yes. Not quite as much here in Old Faithful, kind of.
Yes. I wrote my old. Yeah, my Old Faithful. I wrote it before.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. So, did you write the novel while you were doing the MFA program?
No, I wrote the story collection, which is my Old Faithful.
Okay. And then did you just set it aside, or did you attempt to publish it then?
I published all the stories in literary journals,
okay.
But I wasn't able to get the book published. I didn't take it personally. I turned to writing novels. Yeah, I published Living Treasures 4 years ago.
Okay.
I feel very fortunate that my Old Faithful won the Juniper Prize.
So tell us what that is.
The Juniper Prize for poetry has been in place for more than 40 years, I believe. Juniper Prize for fiction has been in place for about 10 years. So I heard about recently after someone I knew won the prize, and she had a wonderful story collection called The Other One, Hasanthinka. I decided to give it a try, and to my astonishment, it was selected to be the winner. I feel very honored and humbled. I'm very happy with this book that is coming to the world.
And it was published by the University of Massachusetts Press. Are they the ones who sponsor the Juniper Prize?
Yes.
Ah, very good. When you were ready, were getting ready to submit your story collection for that prize, did you go back and do any rewrites, or did you just send them all in as they were?
I just sent them all in because I've done a lot of rewrites over the years.
So how long ago did you actually write these stories?
You will be shocked. It's been 17, before they were accepted, that's 17 years. So it's 18 years from now.
Oh, that's not shocking. There's a lot of people who take that long to get things into print, but I can see what you mean, that you feel very fortunate that they did make it into a story collection. Do you think
yeah.
that the fact that you had published a novel in the interim helped?
I think this is separate. Publishing is separate endeavors
okay.
compared to writing. Yeah, so publishing has a lot to do with timing and luck, but writing is just simple hard work.
So what is your... So are you still writing, I assume?
Yes.
What are you working on now?
I'm working on a new novel titled Oasis, which I have worked on for years. The love story has haunted and evolved with me. Do you want to give a summary of the
sure.
story?
Yeah.
A boy, Lou, saves a girl, Kara, from being drowned in a flash flood. They grew up in Minqing, an oasis sandwiched between two deserts in northwestern China. Kara leaves the hometown to study and become a radiologist. Lou stays behind to fight the dust storms and raise a family in the oasis, which slowly dries up and becomes a desert. It's a story about unrequited love, economic development at the cost of environmental degradation, and one's lifelong obsession with her birthplace. Although Kara has left her village, the village has never left her.
Wow. So mm-hmm. are you close to finished with it?
I have done two drafts. and I will cut back and condense. It's 120 some words now. I think the finished product may be closer to 80 to 100 some words.
Do you find that part of the process, the editing and winnowing down, do you find that enjoyable or more difficult than writing itself?
It's both enjoyable and very difficult. Because the story is not done until those characters have taken over and, you know, be authentically themselves on the page. So you may have helped birth them, but in subsequent drafts, they need to be almost autonomous from the author. They really need to surprise and teach you what you don't know about them. And that takes a lot of, and the story can change. they become real people too at the end. They will challenge you.
So as you're writing about characters and they can surprise you. So they change and they become perhaps different than what you imagined when you first started. Is that possible?
Yes, and they should. It's a discovery. It's a journey of discovery. If they don't surprise you, they will not surprise the reader. But in order for them to surprise you, the writer must make them, you know, really autonomous, that able to challenge you. Mm-hmm. And that is very difficult process. You need to overcome your preconceptions about these characters.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even though you know the stories, you essentially still don't know these people until they, you know, throw it back at you.
Well, let's go back to My Old Faithful and tell me about some of the ways the characters surprised you.
Mm-hmm. Which character?
Let's say the younger daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is a good example. So, Leon, initially I started with a family of four people. Then somewhere along the line, I conceived a third story for a sister. So I decided to create a younger sister. She's spirited and more independent than her older sister. In the story, the homely girl, I mean, the birthday girls. The mother, you know, thinks she knows her daughter the best. But this young daughter, she has plenty of common sense that her mother overlooks. They had a point of contention, whether to spend the mother's monthly salary on a pair of shoes that she will outgrow in 6 months. It is not really about the shoes, so to speak. It's more between, you know, tradition, folklore, even superstition versus rational thinking. Western values and consumerism included, you know, which attracted some as a teenager like Leon, who eventually immigrates to the U.S. So the mother's success in luring her daughter, born in the Year of Dragon and on Guanyin's birthday, is to understand the cultural support for women in a patriarchal society and equip her with more resources. She's saying, be the feminist that you are, but also use the support from your mother, aunties, other village women, even the goddess Mercy. We are here for you. So I guess both mother and daughter surprised me in that story, that they can, you know, they can meet each other on a higher ground.
Now the mother still had, had some religious beliefs.
Yes.
But at that time, were they pretty, you sort of had to hide that? Is that true?
Yeah, it's considered a superstition. The cultural revolution in China was, you know, devastating because it pretty much uprooted a lot of traditions, rituals, which still flourish in Taiwan and South Asia. But China is a country that it's kind of like a spiritual void for a lot of people.
It seems like possibly some of those traditions are coming back because I know that I have a business that we deal a lot with China. We have partners in China, and they asked to postpone or to reschedule our weekly call next week because it was the eve of the tomb sweeping day.
Yes. Oh, this tradition has not, has always been in place. Yes.
Okay.
Not all traditions are equal.
Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, some traditions have come back, but some traditions are in place only in form, and the underlying motivation has changed.
Ah, okay.
But by and large, the tradition has changed very quickly in mainland China, more quickly than in other parts of the world that has, you know, when Chinese tradition is very well preserved. So I was very moved to see the Chinese New Year parade in San Francisco. It felt like way more traditional than mainland China.
Mm.
Like line dance, you know, and dragon dance. Of course, they modify the tradition as well. In China, only boys can do line dance and dragon dance, but in San Francisco, there are a lot of girls.
So,
which
Yang,
is beautiful to watch.
How about you read to us from one of the stories in My Old Faithful?
Okay. I will read the opening scene of the title story, My Old Faithful, from the mother's point of view.
Great.
So she's 51 years old.
And this is the final story in the book.
Yes. As soon as I set foot in the nursery's garden, I found an auspicious flower, a red double peony. Its huge blossoms burst forth as if brimming over with rose-red joy. I stand in awe while a store clerk tells me its strong stems never fall, even in the harshest weather. Its name, Old Faithful, makes it perfect for my home, as my husband and I are going to have our 30th wedding anniversary in 2 weeks. Yes, I say. I carry the potted peony to the storefront. My husband is talking to a young woman in a fluffy, chrysanthemum-like hairdo. Can you give me a hand? I call out to him. The woman glances at me, backs away into the crowd, and boards the bus. My husband takes my heavy pot and clamps onto the back seat of his bike. You scared with some business, he tells me with a smile. What sort of business? The body kind. He crisscrosses the pot with a nylon rope and fastens a dead knot. I'm pretty sure she was a prostitute. You mean she wanted you? He pushes a bike onto the sidewalk. Am I not a man? Don't I have a wallet? Watch your mouth. I feel a sharp pain in my back and grab the seat of his bike. My fibroids are acting up again. I've had them for more than 10 years. Now I'm beginning to have belly and back pains. My husband took me to the hospital this morning. A doctor suggested I have a hysterectomy, to have both my uterus and ovaries removed. It's a safe procedure, she told me, and many women who have had it are very happy with the results. I told her I had to think about it. Upset, I left the hospital with a single thought that I'll buy something nice to cheer me up. I found the Old Faithful, but what's the use of that if my husband is bent on ruining my day? You carry on like this and make sure that bad luck follows my heels, I accuse him. Take it easy. He holds my hand and squeezes it gently. She wants business and we don't, so there's no transaction, End of story. I watched the crowd moving street. Young men and women dressed in white, fawn, lavender, and dark summer outfits that bring out the radiant faces. No one knows I'm about to lose my uterus, with which I have borne 3 children. My older daughter is expecting a baby, and my younger daughter is getting married to an Indian man. My son is dating a professional dancer, who seems to think herself too pretty for him. Not that I care much for young people's folly, but here I stand on the sidewalk in the midday sun, feeling stranded on an island of youth with my old man. I skip a little. As far as I can remember, I placed only one bet in my whole life, to choose a man and marry. Based on the Gregorian calendar, my husband's birthday was in early July and mine was in late July. However, according to the lunar calendar, we were born on the same day and an hour, but 2 days apart, which I took as a good omen when we started out. Back then, he couldn't afford to take me to a good eating place. There was a peony tree where he lived. So he brought me a white peony on first date. I kept it in a pink enamel cup for over a month until it withered. Its petals became brittle, eventually broke to pieces. We were married a year later on a lunar birthday. The sweet scent of peony permeated our new home. 10 months later, we had our first daughter. From then on, we celebrate our anniversary in place of a lunar birthday. We were blessed with a son and younger daughter in years to come. Bringing up 3 children nearly took all that we had. I never owned a tube of lipstick until my children left home. Yet every year I bought a half dozen cut peonies to celebrate our anniversary. Today, for the first time in 30 years, I allowed myself to buy a specimen plant. I unlocked the apartment door and let my husband carry the potted peony inside. Was she good looking? I asked casually.
Are you going to stop there?
Yeah, I'm going to stop here.
Okay. So I have a couple of questions. One is, can you explain the difference between the lunar calendar and the Gregorian calendar?
They're just 2 different calendars. So the lunar calendar, a month is 28 days.
Okay.
Gregorian calendar is like 28 or 29 or 30 or 31.
Right.
So the months will be different.
Right. How many months are there in the lunar calendar?
Oh, I think still 12, yes.
Okay, so the year is shorter then.
Exactly, yes.
But then the seasons, like July wouldn't always be in the summer then, over a period of
time. Actually, don't quote me on this. I have to look into that.
Yeah, I'm curious.
But, you know, the Chinese New Year is different every year. Usually it falls in somewhere in January. Sometimes it's in February. It's more in line with the seasons.
Right.
So the spring, summer, autumn, and winter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just was always curious about that because it seems like that you'd have the same number of days in a year regardless of what calendar you were using. But apparently not.
Apparently not.
Yeah.
But there's some adjustment to be made when it lags too much behind, I think.
And then I was curious, like, when there are phrases like where she says to the husband, "You carry on like this and make sure that bad luck follows my heels." Now, is that the idea of bad luck following your heels? Is that a common concept in Chinese language that we don't have in English?
Yes. And Chinese people believe what you say or think will make it come true. So you never say, inauspicious in front of elders, especially during the holidays. Mm. It's really ironic because Chinese people believe children can tell the truth. If a baby sees you and smiles, it means that you're a good person, you have good health, or you're going to have good luck. You should just go ahead and go buy lottery.
I'll remember that.
Yeah, but because baby cannot lie. But if the baby sees you and cries, that means you are not such a good person. You may get into you have bad health, and you may get into an accident.
Oh my.
So parents just capitalize on this belief by, you know, dressing up their children during the holidays, make them bow to the elders and say the auspicious things, and the elders will give them gift money as a reward. They do believe what you say will make it come true.
Well, it sounds like a pretty good system for the kids.
It is. It's very reliable for the kids.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Yang Huang, author of My Old Faithful. So, Yang, tell us how you, a little bit about your writing process. Are you one of these authors who will write a first draft really quickly, not do a lot of editing or any editing while you go, or are you one of the ones who likes to get a really kind of complete thing down before you go on to the next chapter?
Any book is a little bit different. For this story collection, I had a metaphor in place. I knew what story I want to tell, but I don't know how to get there. So I happily went overboard with my research. For example, I read 20 nonfiction books on dogs for Binding Yellow and watched dog-themed movies. And I researched fishing for The Umbrella. I researched Indian food for The Gourmet out of curiosity. I also read the similarly themed fiction just to become familiar with a new subject matter. For example, I read Ian McEwan's stories to understand teen boy psychology. Most of the material wasn't used in the story, but I constructed a world in my mind when the story takes place, like building a movie set. Then I was able to inhabit that space, live this story, move and see the world through their eyes. So the so-called plot emerged organically out of the nonfiction material. It felt like a real life I lived. I didn't have to force the characters to act in a certain way. Eventually, they revealed themselves to me.
So you don't plot it out ahead of time?
I knew what's going to happen. I don't plot it out of time. I discover the story and discover the people in the process.
You have the character and you have the ending when you start writing.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you happily go overboard in the research. Do you ever sort of like, I really should be writing, but I want to watch another dog scene in a movie?
It has happened. You know, I end up with a huge mess of material that I could never put together until I did. That makes every story very difficult to write, even though in the end they come together. I didn't know it's going to happen this way. It just feels excruciating, haphazard, until I finally made some subliminal connection and just crawled out of the maze with the inch of my life.
And how do you know when you're done with a story, when it's finished? How can you tell?
I feel like the character has surprised me sufficiently, and he or she is not myself anymore. They usually start with someone that I know and ends up becoming a character that is new to me. Mm. That's when I know I have arrived to a place I feel this is completely fictional. I usually write out the first draft just to see the ending. Sometimes the ending reverses in the second draft.
Oh, really?
You know, the opposite happens more than a few occasions, yes.
Oh, wow.
Now, from then on, the ending stays the same, and I will rewrite the middle many times. For a novel, I say up to 30 drafts.
Up to 30 drafts?
Yes, for living. Yeah, I think I at least wrote 20 drafts for the Living Treasures. Yeah.
Wow.
Every time you look for something, there's some problem area you're working on. So.
Now, in your bio, it says that you were part of the student uprisings in 1989. It feels like that would be really great subject material for a novel. Are you going
yes.
to write that at some point?
I have alluded to the student movement in Living Treasures. Yeah, that is in the background.
Mm.
But I want to write a story that's not just political in nature. I want them to still be autonomous people just in their political environment. I think, you know, characters always, they're always autonomous. You know, doesn't matter. In the end, it needs to be a love story or a failed love story rather than a political story. They could embody, the era, but there should not be a direct reaction to that.
You don't want the characters to get swallowed up by the goings on of the political atmosphere.
I think they are more autonomous than that. Of course, they're affected by it. Their lives are affected by it. But
yes.
The choices they make, it makes them, in the end, it's individual choice about, how they digest.
So what was
what they're going through?
What was your role in the movement? How involved were you?
I marched with millions of people, not just students, but also teachers, workers, and people from all walks of life. For a moment, political reform and democracy—it seems like political reform and democracy could come to China, but our hope was dashed by Tiananmen Square massacre.
And is that when you left China?
I left shortly after the crackdown. Yeah.
Was it hard to get out?
It was. For many reasons.
I realize you might not be able to say too much, so that's okay.
That's okay. I think I'm actually free to say about Tiananmen Square massacre. Yes. Yeah. It's hard to laugh. It's not because of Tiananmen Square massacre. It's because, of economic reasons. We can't afford to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And cultural reasons. It's very hard for me to leave because that's all I knew. And going to a new country, there's cultural barrier, a language barrier.
Now, did your whole family come at the same time or did you go first and then your parents and your brother came later?
I came first. My brother never came. He went to Canada.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not too far away.
Right. Many years later, he went there 10 years after I came to the U.S. So that's completely separate. And I sponsored my parents, many years later. We all came separately. But I did have relatives. So I was able to get loan for my education and support a family.
So Yang, how do you balance writing and your job as an electrical engineer and IT advisor?
It's very difficult.
I bet.
But I do try to separate my writing life from my personal life. In order to write well, I have writer persona that's different from my real life persona. You know, in real life, I am very conscientious and reliable. I multitask, set priorities, and deliver results on time. For example, I have to keep hundreds of computers running properly and cannot be 1 minute late from picking up my children from school. I allow myself to relax when I retreat into my writing life. So usually I wait for my family to go to bed and I let the appointments, obligations fall away from my life.
So when do you sleep?
Yeah, really?
Not much.
I'll bet.
But,
and
my children have gotten used to me.
How old are your clothing. Children now?
They are almost 13 and almost 15.
And how do they feel about your success as a writer?
They are very proud, but they will not tell me that. So they play it cool, but they come to me for help when they get stuck in writing. They just asked me not to be too harsh on them.
Now, when you were writing Living Treasures, were you writing it just, and then when it was done, you tried to get it published, or did you have any kind of contract while you were writing?
I submitted, a couple agents worked with it. Eventually end up with Barbara Brown. She gave me more editing advice. She submitted for a year and wasn't able to land a big publisher. So I took it on to submit to the small press. And I was pretty fortunate to find Harvard Square Editions. They publish socially aware literature that tell ambitious stories. They took it on. During that time, I was writing a new novel, Oasis. So I'm always multitasking because if you just stop and submit, that's very discouraging.
Right.
I think writing should always be the top priority. So even if you don't get published, you will become a better writer over the years, or at least tell more stories. I think that's always worthwhile.
And Living Treasures won the Nautilus Book Award Silver Medal. Can you tell us a little bit about that award? Who sponsors it?
I just found out about the Nautilus Book Award, and I submitted to it.
Mm. So that was after it was published?
Yes. And there's some other books that won that category that I admired, and that's how I learned about it.
Ah, very good. And when you first held that first book in your hand, was that a special moment for you?
It was, yes. Also, my children began to have an idea what mom's working on. My younger one was only fourth grader at the time. He got hold of my galley. I'm like, this is not appropriate for a fourth grader to read, but he wouldn't let it go, and he was reading it in after school program. So he was eating those apple and just reading this story that is it's pretty difficult to write and difficult to read at points, but he finished in two afternoons, I think.
Oh.
It was very easy to read. And he liked it. He recommended it to his older brother. So they became proud of me, and I feel very grateful for their support. And yeah, I think in the end, it was taken as a family success of our family. So I was very grateful that, because I give so much for them, and it's very gratifying to see them come back and nurture me in return.
Yang, do you think you would ever want to be a full-time writer?
I would love to be, yes, after I retire. And there's no other thing that I would rather spend my time with, yes. But as an immigrant, it's just very risky and very difficult to be a full-time writer. And it's difficult for anyone, really, until you become commercially successful.
Right,
sure.
right. Yeah, you
Yeah.
can't really, you can't
And
just
I think
put
in a
everything.
way, it helps sustain me over the years. That's okay to be rejected as long as I keep writing. So, I take it as a test, and that's my life's journey, and I'm okay with it. And
Now,
one day I will write full time.
I understand you write essays as well.
Yes.
Is what type of essays?
I haven't written a lot of essays, 'cause it's a little bit harder to open myself up and write truthfully. And I love fiction. I think story is just more interesting. Of course, it's more difficult and takes much longer to write a novel or even short story than personal essays. But this
Right.
can change, when I have more time, maybe I'll experiment more with essays.
When you're writing, like this novel that you're writing now, you said that the idea for it haunted you for a long time. Do you have other ideas for books that are knocking and saying, "Come on, come on, we want
I don't have a lot of ideas, fortunately.
our
Only one at a time, one or two at a time, so I can focus my energy on those projects.
turn?" That's good.
But I do have another book after this one, tentatively titled The Good Son. It was something I already completed many years ago, but I want to rewrite that story. It happened in China, but I want to move it to Oakland, Chinatown, and make it an immigrant story. The essential story may remain the same, but people will change and the environment change, and yeah, I will have a new discovery process with that
Wow,
book, and I look forward to writing that one as well. Yeah, I don't have too many ideas, otherwise I'll be overwhelmed.
really. Now, do you do readings with these books, like at bookstores and so forth? Have you done much of that?
Yes.
And you mentioned that you're an introvert. Do you find that difficult to do?
It is different. I would rather be writing, but I find that it's also great to connect with readers. I still think I prefer to write. Yeah. I give talks and I enjoy doing that, and people have come to tell me, and they enjoy my readings as well. But yeah, I think my favorite activity is still writing.
Well, we've really enjoyed having you with us today, Yin.
Indeed, indeed.
And the book is My Old Faithful. It's a story cycle of stories about a family in China, and then in one of the characters comes to the US and set between the 60s and the 90s, and very historically accurate.
It's interesting when you read a book about a different country that people are the same wherever they are. they have the same emotions. Now they may have to hide them sometimes and they act differently, but they're still people are people.
Very
Yeah,
true.
it's essentially a middle class family.
Yeah,
That's
yeah.
right.
And
Yeah.
when the daughter falls in love with an Indian man or brings an Indian man home, you see this, you find the similarities there too
Yeah.
between those two cultures.
Thank you. Thank you so much for reading my book.
Of
Yeah.
course.
And I had a great conversation with
Great.
you.
Thank
I
you
loved
so
your questions.
much. And Mom, do you have some final words for us today?
Yes, I'm is a continuation of what I just said, actually. No matter where we live or what language we speak, we need to practice kindness to one another in order that people can know about people in other places. And the only way to do that is through communication.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's
And
very inspiring.
thank you all for listening today, and see you next week on Writers' Voices.